Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
All right, you're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Delighted you're with us. Wait a second, what time is it? Oh, that CNN town hall on the climate change is still going on. I literally was joking last night during the Ingraham angle because I thought, well, it can't still be going on. So I was joking about, well, still going on. Well, it was still going on. This thing went on for 7 hours. I was thinking the planet would end and just spontaneously combust from all the hot air coming out of the climate change forum. But when they say climate change and we're going to have a climate policy or Green New Deal, what you have to understand is it just means they want to control you. So when they say Green New Deal, that means you lose power. You lose control of your own decision making because they think they're smarter than you are, and they think that they are better suited to make these decisions about what kind of car you drive and, you know, what you set your thermostat at and, you know, how many kids you can have, whether you can eat meat or not. I mean, these are all decisions that they prefer for a small set of elites to make. That makes sense to them. But of course, it doesn't make sense at all. And wild claims made by the candidates with an assist from some of the CNN folks. There's wild claims made about what's happening to the planet. Now, two men who will never be president, but for some reason get inordinate amounts of airtime, made, well, again, they have to try to break through, which, you know, they're just stalled out. Despite all the magazine coverage, it's hilarious. Buttigieg and Beto.
One of the reasons I love the framing of the Green New Deal is it uses some of the language that we might associate with the way that we met the response of Nazi Germany in World War II. All of this country coming together with a singular focus of making sure that we overcome what was at that time an existential threat to this country and to our democracy.
This is the hardest thing we will have done, certainly in my lifetime as a country. This is on par with winning World War II, perhaps even more challenging than that.
I don't even know it's worth responding to these people. They're just out of steam. They just have nothing. They just have to like reach for, it's either comparing Trump to Nazi Germany. Trump's like Stalin, Nazi Germany, Hitler, Pol Pot, all rolled into one. It's either doing that or now carbon is the new Nazi-like threat to the planet. And, you know, look, I think we should be cleaner and concerned. I was walking on a major thoroughfare the other day picking up plastic bottles. It's a long story. I'm disgusted by the amount of trash that we produce as individuals. I don't think we need all this plastic. I think it's ridiculous that we package everything in plastic. I'm disgusted by the trash. I'm disgusted by the fact that people dump junk in the ocean. But I'm also disgusted by the fact that these people want to take power away from the American individual. Pastor Buttigieg then tries to shame you.
You know, if you believe that God is watching as poison is being belched into the air of creation and people are being harmed by it, countries are at risk of vanishing in low-lying areas, we suppose God thinks of that. I bet he thinks it's messed up. And eventually it gets to the point where this is less and less about the planet as an abstract thing and more about specific people suffering specific harm because of what we're doing right now. At least one way of talking about this is that it's a kind of sin.
I'm not sure Mayor Pete's effort to shame folks into decarbonizing is really going to work. Remember, none of these people are going to decarbonize at all. How did they all arrive at the climate change endless forum? Did they arrive by all electric vehicle or boat?
Buttigieg does admit at some point, oh yeah, I take private jets around, but you know, I got to travel around the country, so that's okay.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like Leo DiCaprio flying to the Google eco conference, whatever the heck it was in Europe. And they're all, it's like jet lock. You know, it's gridlock. It's jet lock at the airports, at the Cannes Film Festival. All these liberal do-gooders. It's always do as I say, not as I do. They build these Mongo homes with layers of security, but they don't think we should have a wall at our southern border. They have bodyguards and handlers, but nobody else should be able to defend themselves. And they have private aviation and endless gas-guzzling cars. I mean, do they really need a fleet of cars? Do they really need 10 cars? Do they really need 3 Range Rovers? Probably not, but they buy them because they can. But all of you should have like a Flintstone car or something. Yabba dabba do.
Human population growth has more than doubled in the past 50 years. The planet cannot sustain this growth. I realize this is a poisonous topic for politicians, but it's crucial to face. Empowering women and educating everyone on the need to curb population growth seems a reasonable campaign to enact. Would you be courageous enough to discuss this issue and make it a key feature of a plan to address climate catastrophe?
Ooh, we're going to China here.
Well, Martha, the answer is yes.
One child policy.
And the answer has everything to do with the fact that women in the United States of America, by the way, have a right to control their own bodies and make reproductive decisions. And the Mexico City Agreement, which denies American aid to those organizations around the world that are that allow women to have abortions or even get involved in birth control, to me is totally absurd. So I think, especially in poor countries around the world, where women do not necessarily want to have large numbers of babies, and where they can have the opportunity through birth control to control the number of kids they have, something I very, very strongly support.
So kill off the poor people, and more abortions will solve the problem. Maybe Bernie thinks we should, like, compost the aborted remains of children. Is it to keep it all going? Let's really use this for the planet. The U.S. fertility rate just hit a historic low, dopes. I mean, this is a big. Americans are having so few babies these days that the fertility rate is at a historic low. In some ways, it's a sign of progress, says the left. This came out back in May. So they think America, an America that is not growing, they don't want a strong GDP. They want everyone to be kept at the same low level, because then you'll be able to save the snail darter or the, you know, some finch somewhere, or the wren will never be endangered again. I mean, this is what they want. So everybody stays at a flat level. There's very little growth, and you should just like your life, because they say so. And if you have more than one baby, they want to tax you or take the baby from you or kill the baby. That's where this is going. See, people don't understand. There is a logical continuum as to where this is going. Oh, and by the way, I'm not going to belabor Dumbo Beto's point anymore, but he actually said that part of the asylum application process should include if you've been impacted by climate change. That should be a permissible category. Are you kidding me? A permissible category for applying for asylum. So it's not just you're persecuted as a Christian or for political reasons. It's you feel like there are too many storms in your town. Or it was too hot last summer for you, so that you actually get to apply for asylum. Many claims were made that we're going to completely debunk with our next guest. But I want to thank all of our sponsors, ADT Home Security, Genucel, Purple Mattress, Pluto TV. They help provide this podcast free for you every week, and we love them. So thank you so much. Well, some of the claims that were made, as I said, during this forum, we need to just bat down. Here are some.
These hurricanes are happening more frequently. We actually have to tackle the issue of the climate crisis so that these storms are less likely to happen in the first place.
The hurricane, which we know was a level 5 hurricane when it hit the Bahamas in a way that we've never seen before.
We have 11 years to avoid the catastrophic consequences, more extreme weather events like Hurricane Dorian.
Well, of course, he's helping with these ludicrous claims. Joining us now, Dr. Roy Spencer, former senior scientist for climate studies at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center and currently a principal research scientist at the University of Alabama, Huntsville. Dr. Spencer, of the claims that were made during this endless climate change extravaganza on CNN, what jumped out at you as kind of the more egregious of claims that are not supported by science or data?
Well, Laura, I wasn't going to put myself through 7 hours of everything I've heard before from these people. I knew it was all going to be ridiculous. So you're going to have to tell me which ones you want me to address. So let's start with that first one about Dorian. Yes, Dorian was an exceptional storm, but it was not unprecedented, and it wasn't even unexpected climatologically. Okay, the fact that maybe it was the biggest one in modern times to hit the northwest Bahamas, well, you know, anytime there's a F5 tornado that hits, you know, Podunk, Kansas, it's probably the worst one that's ever hit Podunk, Kansas. It's just sort of the luck of the draw because these things, you know, are very powerful, but over a fairly small area. And where they happen to hit has a certain random element to it. Dorian ends up being the 12th or 13th strongest storm in the Atlantic in modern records. And I say in modern records because we really only know about the intensity of Atlantic storms going back to the early 1970s. If we're talking about landfalling hurricanes, then we can go back into the 1800s because obviously people were around. But before the 1970s, we didn't have satellites to observe out in the Atlantic everything that was going on and how intense these storms were.
Well, so again, every time we have a bad storm or hurricane, invariably the commentary coming from those who want to drastically reorient our economy, decarbonize, they reflexively say, see? Climate change. We have more intense storms than ever. And I think a lot of, especially young people, Dr. Spencer, they say, oh my God, this is awful. We've got to do something. But the correlation is not established. Correct? Am I saying that correctly or incorrectly?
I think you're saying that correctly. Basically, there's a lot of year-to-year changes in hurricane activity. Let's just talk about the Atlantic Basin, and especially landfalling hurricanes in the United States. And it's not just year to year there are variabilities. There's a lot of variability. It's decade to decade and even century to century. So, for instance, let's take major landfalling hurricanes in Florida, okay? That is like major hurricane central, especially south of about West Palm Beach. That's where most of the major hurricane activity is. The long-term record of landfalling major hurricane activity in Florida since 1900, there's been no trend in either the number of those storms or their intensity. Okay, so this idea that things are getting worse is simply not true. Now, it may be for somebody who is, let's say, a young person in their 30s that has lived in Florida, the activity has gone up during that period of time. But if you were a young person in the 30s living in their 30s, living, let's say, in the 1960s in Florida, you would have experienced in your lifetime a decrease in activity because it was very active from the late 20s to about the early 50s. You know, there were a lot of major hurricanes striking Florida. So this is just natural variability. And, you know, I think you'll agree with me that it seems like everything that happens in weather now, okay, anything bad that happens in weather, we stamp it with the term climate change, when in fact, it's just natural variability. It's happened before, and as far as we can tell, there's no long-term change in it.
Well, and I think there are claims that are made about breathing carbon, which is what Elizabeth Warren said last night. I have to play this for you, Dr. Spencer. Let's listen.
Most economists believe that a carbon tax is the most efficient way to reduce carbon emissions. Would you push for such a tax?
I think of this as what my mother taught me, and that is you got to clean up your own messes. And that means if you're going to be spewing carbon into the air and messing up the air for the rest of us, it's your responsibility to clean it up. But yes, we need to say that those who are throwing the carbon into the air that the rest of us have to breathe, that the rest of us have to deal with, are the ones who are responsible for paying for that.
So
I'm there.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you think about that, Dr. Spencer,
well,
breathing in
worried,
the carbon?
Well, first of all, you know, it's carbon dioxide, not carbon. Those are two different things. Okay. Carbon dioxide that we produce from burning of fossil fuels is necessary for life to exist on Earth. And in fact, we have seen since the early 1980s a global greening around the world from satellite data. And the researchers that publish this global greening data say that it's probably from the increasing CO2 in the atmosphere. Now, if she's really worried about how much CO2 she's breathing, she shouldn't be inside buildings with people, okay? I carry around a CO2 meter sometimes, mm-hmm. and the CO2 amounts outside are, you know, somewhat over 400 parts per million. You come inside, and it's 600, 700, 1,000 parts per million because, you know, we heavily insulate our buildings, and you get people inside breathing out large amounts of CO2, and the CO2 content goes up a lot. Now, you don't notice it. It's like an imaginary problem. Now, I should say, I do believe that increasing CO2 is causing some of the warming we've seen, mm-hmm. but I don't consider it a crisis. I don't consider it a disaster. There was a new adjective you had in one of those quotes from last night, and catastrophe. That's what it was. Global, it's some sort of climate catastrophe. It's more like a yawn.
Yeah, well, the temperature increase being caused by, and you say in part at least by the CO2 emissions, increased emissions on the planet. Mm-hmm. How much is that going to increase temperatures? And then does that mean that in 12 years, you know, half of the eastern seaboard will be underwater as I think Ocasio-Cortez
I phrase it is that for most people, the level of warming or the rate of warming we're seeing is not enough for any individual person to notice in their lifetime. Okay, it's about 0.2 degrees C per decade. And even that is equivocal. And then you can address, you know, well, I equivocal because there's uncertainty about the data sets. None of our temperature data sets, the instrumentation that we've used was ever designed to measure this needle in the haystack. It was designed to measure weather variability, you know, tens of degrees, you know, 40 below zero in the winter, 110 degrees in the summer, not 0.2 of a degree per decade. So there's a lot of uncertainty about how much warming has occurred, but, you know, let's assume that it's correct. Then you have to ask the question, how much of it is due to humans? There is no fingerprint of human-caused global warming. People claim there is, but there isn't. All warming looks the same, no matter whether it's caused by nature or humans. It's going to be greater over land than over ocean. It's going to be greater the farther north you get. Let's say as you go towards the North Pole, it's going to be less as you go down towards Antarctica. Okay? It's supposed to be amplified as you go up through the atmosphere. That's mm-hmm. one of the things we work on with our satellite data because mm-hmm. we don't see the amplification, and we think it's a sign that the climate system doesn't care as much about increasing CO2 as the climate models claim. And, in fact, the average climate models that are guiding all of the decisions about future energy policy are on average, producing twice as much warming as what we're seeing from satellite data since the satellite data started in 1979.
I have a question about the inaccurate temperatures that are invariably used to drive this climate change debate. And there's always the picture of the, you know, the sad picture of the polar bear on the ice floe. There's the measurement of glaciers and the glacial melt that we're seeing, although it seems like the glaciers have been melting for, you know, a long, long time. But, the, you know, that that's kind of those things drive this debate, Dr. Spencer. And again, a lot of inaccuracy in the way those are being discussed and reported.
Well, even Al Gore doesn't mention the polar bears anymore because the polar bear population has actually increased in recent decades. So, you know, it was a cute poster child for global warming, but it's really not valid to use anymore. Yes, sea ice, especially in the Arctic, has decreased since we started monitoring that with satellites back in 1979. But there are now long-term estimates of sea ice in the Arctic that go back many centuries, the proxy estimates. It's based on how much algae grows. There's this kind of algae that grows on the bottom of sea ice each year, and then it falls and gets deposited on the ocean bottom, and then they go down and they measure the layers of how much algae there was. And what they've found is it looks like there was actually quite a bit more sea ice in the Arctic several hundred years ago. In other words, the sea ice in the Arctic has been decreasing gradually for several hundred years. And we know that several hundred years ago was the Little Ice Age. So it could be that what we're seeing is just an extension of a natural process. Again, we don't know. And like I said, I think some of the warming we've seen is due to CO2, but we just don't know how much.
Another thing I want to raise with you is this claim that eating meat that Elizabeth Warren raised has to be substantially reduced. Listen.
There are a lot of ways that we try to change our energy consumption and our pollution. And God bless all of those ways. Some of it is with light bulbs. Some of it is on straws. Some of it, dang, is on cheeseburgers, right? There are a lot of different pieces to this, and I get that people are trying to find the part that they can work on and what can they do, and I'm in favor of that, and I'm going to help, and I'm going to support.
What about that? Is that going to do anything besides...
I really haven't looked into the meat thing, so I can't add anything intelligent to that discussion.
Well, I mean, I guess we can come up with better-tasting tofu or... I don't know.
Well, what I can say is, you know, the... Eating meat, the concern there is water use and methane production, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, methane is a bit player in the whole global warming scenario. I don't see any of the experts worrying about future methane emissions because it just, even though it's a powerful gas, there's virtually none of it in the atmosphere, a powerful greenhouse gas. So people just don't really worry. Scientists really don't worry about how much methane there is in the atmosphere because it really doesn't affect global warming projections.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear, and we talked about this earlier, it was interesting to hear about the desire to control populations because they focused on the doubling of the global population over time and that it's not sustainable. Because obviously humans use energy and humans, you know, produce waste and so forth. And that's as we, you know, had the America's historically low birth rate study that just came out in May that shows, you know, we're barely at replacement of our population now. Like young people just, you know, aren't having kids. They're not having children.
This is one of the tricks that the radical environmentalists and the population control freaks use is they look at what's happened, let's say, in the past, in the recent decades, let's say the last 50 years, and say, if these trends continue, you know, it's going to be terrible in another 200 years. Well, even the United Nations projects that global population is going to level off, stop increasing late in this century. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's the prosperous countries of the world that are reducing population growth. It's the poor countries that, you know, are really increasing population growth. And as democracy and free markets spread across the world, population growth will gradually decrease and it won't be a problem anymore. And the Earth can easily sustain the population we have you know, times three, but we're not even going to reach that.
Yeah. Again, I think the alarmism, it's classic. It's a classic political tactic. I know both sides have used alarmism and threats of catastrophes in the past for various reasons. And it's usually to justify massive government power grabs or the expenditure of a huge amount of money. I mean, we saw alarmism in the Iraq War. You know, if we don't do this, this is going to happen. It turned out to be false, causing huge upheaval throughout the Middle East. And now we're seeing it on the climate. It'll shift to something else. But I think they're kind of, again, it seems like these arguments are kind of out of gas to me. And they're not really moving. The climate change debate is not really moving, I don't think, and Mike can check this, the top five concerns for most people. Where is climate change? I think it was down at number 18 or something of the top 20. I just don't think most Americans are buying this, or they're not buying the idea that they have to radically alter their lifestyles in order to fulfill, you know, this utopian idea of, you know, everyone's going to drive around in a Tesla. Yeah. Or
climate change ranked as 15th.
15th out of 28. So I don't know about that, but I think for people who do care about science, you know, you hear things like this, Dr. Spencer, that, well, there's a consensus among scientists that climate change is happening, and what does there anything to that? There's always a consensus that we are creating a disaster for the planet, and is there a consensus on that?
No, anytime I hear that phrase tossed about, that there's a consensus, that all of the scientists agree, I ask the person that says it, tell me what the consensus is. Exactly what is it that all scientists agree to? Okay? And they can't answer, because there is no answer. About the only thing that has been established as a consensus is that we're producing CO2 from fossil fuel burning, which is causing the concentration to slowly rise in the atmosphere. That is causing some amount of warming. And the warming since the 1950s is probably mostly due to humans. Well, I agree with that. I mean, I actually agree with that consensus, okay? Except that it's an unremarkable conclusion, because things are not warming up. The Earth is not warming up as fast as the climate models claim, only about half as much for the whole atmosphere and the ocean. And not all of that warming is due to humans. Even the IPCC admits that as much as half of the warming could be due to nature. Now, energy policy is based on the climate models, which warm too much, and the assumption that all the warming is due to humans. So when we look at the observations and see that it's only warming half as fast, and maybe only half of that warming is due to humans, the problem now is only 25% as big as what the politicians are pushing, okay? Mm-hmm. So the consensus is unremarkable. It's not that a disaster, there is no scientific consensus that there's a disaster imminent. That's a talking point that's been created by people like Al Gore and Bill Nye and, you know, environmental activists who depend upon a crisis, right? Like Rahm Emanuel once said, right? Never let a serious crisis
go to waste.
Well, you know, if it's sort of a problem, let's turn it into a crisis, and then we can get some mileage out of it.
Yeah. Well, then they say anyone who disagrees is funded by the big oil and gas.
Yeah,
that's
well,
the other
I
thing.
Wish, you know, and none of us are. None of us skeptics are funded by big oil. None that I know of. Because big oil is basically big oil. You know, the heads of the oil companies have decided in recent years they're just going to go with the flow. What's the point of looking like the bad guy? Okay, they can come out and they can say, yeah, we need to reduce our CO2 emissions in the future, but they know darn well that people still rely on fossil fuels. It's going to be that way for a long time to come. And even if there's a carbon tax, you know, the fossil fuel companies aren't going to pay it. It's the consumers that are going to pay it.
Yeah, it's the regular folks. It's just the rich will always be able to get to where they need to go, but it's the regular people who always end up paying for this. And it's just this is the same with every way that big government tries to control behavior. I mean, I lived in the Soviet Union, and I remember, you know, I remember in the 1980s, like, there was always good food in certain settings. And then everyone else had to wait in line for little scraps of meat that were being sold or fruit that was rare. So it's just – people think it's going to be fair. No, there's just going to be a lot of people at the bottom and then a thin layer in control at the top. So that's the way it always works. There's no system that of government other than ours, frankly, right now that's producing a strong middle class. And we need to hold on to that. And I, you know, Bill Nye, the anti-science guy, he is a that. What a brand, though, huh? What a brand he established.
Well, you know, pop sci, right? He tries to make science simple for the masses, but in the process, sometimes he gets it seriously wrong. He's got a video out there called Climate 101, and it's on Al Gore's website. All right, and it hasn't been taken down yet. And Bill Nye put together this global warming in a jar experiment to show how simple it is to demonstrate that adding CO2 causes warming. And he's got two jars, one with regular air in it, one with pure CO2. He shines a light on both of them, and he claims to measure a temperature increase in the jar that has pure CO2 in it. Well, a meteorologist and TV broadcast meteorologist, Anthony Watts, years ago showed the whole thing was fake. And in fact, if Bill Nye knew anything about how the greenhouse effect actually works, he would know that such an experiment is impossible. You can't demonstrate the warming effect of CO2 by putting CO2 in a glass jar and heating it up. It doesn't work that way.
No. We loved this conversation with you, Dr. Spencer. Come on TV soon. But thank you so much. And just don't breathe in so much carbon, all right? So just stay away from the carbon, Dr. Spencer. All right, you take care. And I want to thank all of our great sponsors, including my friends at Purple Mattress, because they are incredible. They prevent you from enduring another night's sleep of tossing and turning, where you wake up with stiff back, neck pain. Believe me, I've had both, and I have some disc issues in both my neck and my back from all the sports I played. And I know how the quality of sleep affects your life. And you just don't want to be in a situation where you get out of bed in the morning, you feel worse than when you went into bed at night. You want to feel rested and relaxed. And if you want a good night's sleep, you've got to try the Purple Mattress. Purple Mattress will probably, it's going to feel different from anything you've ever had before as a mattress, because of this brand new material that was developed, well, by an actual rocket scientist. That's not bad. Are you going to love Purple? And right now, our listeners getting a free Purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. That's in addition to the great free gifts they're offering site-wide. So if you are not fully satisfied after your 100-night risk-free trial, you can return your mattress for a full refund for free. Just text Laura to 84888. Remember, the only way to get this free pillow is to text Laura to 84888. That's L-A-U-R-A to 84888. You know, you take your home and sometimes your security of your home for granted. You close the door and you think everything's fine. But you've got to do everything in your power to protect your family, because your home is where your heart is, where your possessions, sometimes your valuable possessions are. And of course, the most valuable is your family. Well, ADT can provide everything from video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks, lights, all controlled from the ADT app on your phone, from the sound of your voice. It's peace of mind and it's priceless. I want you to learn more. Get a custom designed ADT home security system connected to first responders installed in your home today. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. And welcome to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Hi, Laura.
Hey, great to have you on.
I just wanted to say about the conference last night, because none of the Dems have original ideas, solutions, platforms, the bottom line seems to be for all of them that they morph their answers to the public and to reporters to what they think those people want to hear. And you just use the word alarmist. And I think that a lot of times when they respond to these things, like they did last night, they immediately go into an alarm mode. And I think that's such pandering, and it's really pitiful, and it needs to stop.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I want to play this from another annoying voice in the Democrat field, and that's in a big group already, Julian Castro.
Should climate change be taught in schools? And if so, how should climate education be implemented in the school curriculum?
Yes, I believe that it should. In fact, I believe that it's essential if we want to raise a generation of Americans that will do right by our planet. We need to do things like end this system of people that get elected, whether it's in Texas or other states. They get elected and then they sit on a statewide board that determines what is in curriculum. And too oftentimes, right-wing conservatives have taken over these boards in places like Texas, and they affect who gets into the history books. It's probably against including any kind of meaningful curriculum on the environment. So there's some structural changes that I believe that we need to make, but I do believe that that kind of curriculum should be taught in our schools because that's how urgent this crisis is.
So they don't indoctrinate your kids enough. They gotta go a step further here. So again, he claims that conservatives, there's a conservative cabal in charge of school textbooks. I wish. Oh my gosh, as someone who's reading school textbooks pretty much every night, I have an eighth grader, a sixth grader, and a fourth grader. I have run the gamut on the textbooks. Even in fairly traditional schools, private schools, you can't get decent textbooks. I think you have to go back 50 years to get a decent textbook. Honestly.
Look what's happened in the Midwest. We have a number of significant bases that military bases that relate to our national security that, in fact, were rendered almost useless, including, I can't go into the great detail to say it, but my point is, It significantly reduced our national security.
Oh gosh, he's just a rambling mess. Everyone's focusing on his bloody eye. I saw that yesterday. It's like a story on Drudge. I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of just popped up all of a sudden because I was watching
this
thing.
Yeah, but I've had a bloody eye before. I think he burst a blood vessel. I also think people are now just blasting Biden for everything. I'm not saying I feel sorry for him, but I do think it's a very mean culture out there. Let's just be perfectly honest. It's a mean culture. He does seem confused a lot, however. But, I mean, he's confused, but he's more sensible than most of these people on most issues. I'd rather have a confused Biden than a sharp Kamala or a sharp Warren, who they pretty much people are saying they think Warren's going to be the nominee. I cannot wait to see these debates with Trump. Trump is just going to – Pocahontas is going to be – she's going to be in a mess after debate with Trump. I relish the idea of it being Elizabeth Warren. Relish it. Well, and then speaking of Kamala, she's desperate to put points on the board, hovering in the single digits.
How will you work across the aisle to support all workers and build trust with Republican constituents dependent on a fossil fuel economy?
As it relates to those Republicans in Congress, where I've now been for 2.5 years,
ooh,
every one of those members needs to look at the babies, the grandbabies in their life, and then look in the mirror and ask themselves, why have they failed to act? If they fail to act as President of the United States, I am prepared to get rid of the filibuster to pass a Green New Deal.
So like it or not, you're going to get what they shove down your throat. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast, and I want to remind all my friends that there's a great end-of-summer sale from Chamonix. That means right now when you order Genucel jawline treatment, I use it and love it morning and night, you'll get the classic Genucel for bags and puffiness for free. That's right. You'll get it free. Here's Beverly from Huntsville, Alabama. She loves this product, she said. She saw a difference almost immediately, and she would recommend it to everyone if they have a problem with the skin on their jawline. All GenuCell products she's tried, she says, are just quite simply amazing. Well, using MDL technology and Chamonix's proprietary base, GenuCell's new jawline treatment specifically targets the delicate skin around the neck and the jaw for tight, healthy, younger-looking skin. And results are guaranteed, or 100% of your money back, no questions asked. And to start seeing results in 12 hours or less, GenuCell Immediate Effects is also free. Order now, and their legendary Collagen Builder, also free. So go to GenuCell.com, that's GenuCell.com. You get three free gifts with your order. It's a limited time only. Go to GenuCell.com, that's GenuCell.com.
If elected, will you be supporting change in dietary guidelines? And then how will you plan on implementing the changes so that people effectively change their diets?
So the answer is yes. Just to be very honest with you, I love cheeseburgers from time to time, right? I mean, I just do. And I think that, but there has to be also what we do in terms of creating incentives that we will eat in a healthy way, that we will encourage moderation. And we have to do a much better job of that. And the government has to do a much better job of that.
But would you support changing the dietary guidelines?
Yes.
You know, the food pyramid, but people are
supposed
to reduce red meat specifically.
Yes, I would.
I think this is such a loser argument for, I just do. I mean, I think in general, Americans probably do eat too much red meat. I think it's just not great for you to eat so much red meat, rely on red meat. But I guess it would mean that we should be more inclined to veganism or vegetarianism. That piece that just came out, the BBC, about how vegetarians may have higher stroke risks. So, I mean, it's, you know, less heart disease, more stroke risk. I don't understand that. They have fewer cases of heart disease and three more strokes, though, per 1,000 people compared with the meat eaters.
And these are just the kind of unintended consequences that these climate alarmists aren't even considering when they propose this legislation.
Well, but they don't care. I mean, again, I'm just going to maintain that none of this is about really making things better. It's about taking choices away from you. The more they can make you dependent on government, the more powerful the elites become. If you're able to get in your car and drive wherever the hell you want, you have freedom. If the government can control your vehicle remotely, which a lot of people think that's also where this is going, they can ration your miles, mile rationing by CO2 controls remotely. They'll do it. I mean, I don't like these smart meters in your houses. I was against the smart meter for your electricity in consumption. If they have a smart meter, they can control where you set your thermostat. I mean, that's all controlled remotely if they want to. Again, when they say Green New Deal, what they mean is controlling your life. And then, of course, they're all talking about these fires in the Amazon, which are heartbreaking. But they fail to mention that fires globally have declined 25% over the last 15 years. That's good news. So fires have gone down. Their occurrence has been reduced significantly. But, you know, you don't want to – I mean, I don't know if there's more we can do. I'm not an expert on the Amazon, and I just – never been there, and I'd love to go there, and I hope it's not all burned down. But I do think, again, they use the pain and tragedy, whether it's on the gun issue or the climate issue, they use it to grab more power. That's all it is. It's a way to control you with very little effect on your quality of life, or you're going to have a better quality of life, or you're going to have a better standard of living. They're not interested in your having a better standard of living, because right now you do have a better standard of living. The Trump policies have ensured that your standard of living is improving year after year. It's gotten better. Wages are going up. More new jobs numbers came out, which are greater than expected, 195,000 jobs. That's great. But that's terrible news for the Democrats, because that means capitalism is working. They don't want more evidence that capitalism is working. They want to be able to refute capitalism an efficient free market, that works against them. Again, these are the same people who say that fracking should be banned. Fracking and horizontal drilling has done more safely to explore for natural gas and oil than the deep drilling that they did. I've gone and seen fracking. I've actually been to on a fracking platform. I know how it works. I spent an entire day with frackers. It's unbelievable. The technology that has gone into fracking, it's fascinating. If you ever have the chance to really observe what they're doing with fracking, you will just be blown away. It is unbelievable. Incredible. That's just America. America has the greatest technology, the greatest ingenuity, incredible concern about, you know, making, not just making money, but making life better for your clients, for your customers. And in this case, now we're energy independent. You know how great that is, that we are energy independent? We don't need Saudi Arabia. We don't need the Middle East. I say the more we disentangle ourselves from Europe with a sinking ship that is, China with a military dictatorship that is, set on world domination, and become more self-sufficient, the better off America will be. Rest of the world's in a slowdown or a standstill. We're vibrant and dynamic as an economy. That's fantastic. But there's nothing worse than for the left than a growing economy under a Republican president. They just don't want that because then it's, oh, wait, what are we going to do about that? They're happy when it's like stagnating wages. No one's doing really, because then they're going to look to government for solutions. We don't want you to have to look to government for solutions. We want you to be self-sufficient. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. I want to thank all of our sponsors again, including ADT Home Security, GenuCell, Purple Mattress, and Pluto TV. Remember, America now and forever. The Laura Ingraham Podcast.